It hasn't happened at Fenway Park for 95 years. The Red Sox are world champions.
Hello and welcome to the Lone Red Seat. I'm Ian Barber.
And I'm Ryan Bajra.
We're here to give you our opinions on everything Red Sox, including our predictions for this upcoming season. The Lone Red Seat is brought to you by Standing O Sports, sports writing that deserves a standing ovation. Visit them at standingosports.com for all the latest MLB, NBA, and NFL news and more, including a season preview for all 30 big league clubs.
You know, just to kind of start out with, let's talk about some of the off-season additions that the Red Sox made and some of the players that they had to let go. I mean, obviously start out with the biggest one, losing Jacoby Ellsbury. How do you feel about that?
You know, we all knew it was happening. We all knew it was coming right from the start. You know, they had the whole blood, sweat, beards thing, and he just never really fit into that. He never really fit into the mold, and I can't really get mad at him for chasing the money because he never really pretended to be one of those guys that wasn't going to go chase the money, and that's exactly what he did. So I'm not really too upset. I think we have guys that can fill in for him, so not too upset about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest thing really for me is losing his speed, because I mean, that was really a big part of our, you know, the Red Sox game last year, and this year it's you know, who's going to be that leadoff guy. And you know, he was a consistent guy up there, but you know, I'm not going to miss his injuries. And you're right, I mean, he didn't fit into the mold of, you know, Boston Strong, really. So, you know, I think, you know, let's talk about the addition, you know, Grady Sizemore. How do you feel about that?
Grady Sizemore is easily the most intriguing guy on the entire Red Sox roster. I mean, he got a guy who's won multiple Silver Slugger Awards and was debatably, like, he was one of the, maybe the best young star in the game when he was first coming up in the Cleveland Indians system, and I was reading this interesting thing earlier today. John Farrell was actually the Indians' leader and player and director and personnel, like scouting, when Sizemore was coming up through the system. So I mean, that's probably had to do with why they signed him. But Sizemore, if he can play at about 75% of the level he did when he was in Cleveland, the early years in Cleveland, then the Red Sox have a capable replacement in center field.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the big concern is, you know, he hasn't played a full season since 2008. He's very injury prone. Obviously, that's why he's been out of the game. But I mean, you're right. I mean, when he's playing at his best, he's one of the top in the game. So they signed him to, you know, I think it's 1 year, $750,000, and then, you know, incentives up to $5 or $6 million if he produces. But it's a win-win for both guys. I mean, they give him a chance to, you know, come back into the league and improve himself. And if he doesn't, then it's really no money lost for the Red Sox. So it's going to be good, you know, start JBJ down in Pawtucket and, you know, see what Sizemore can do to start the season.
Is it bad that I am hoping a little bit for some injuries to give us a Jackie Bradley Jr., Grady Sizemore, Shane Victorino outfield? That defense would just be insane. I can't even imagine it.
It would be. I mean, there's so much speed out there. But, you know, I mean, left field, there's not much to cover out there. I think Nava and Gomes can handle it.
Good point. If Manny Ramirez could handle it, pretty much anyone can.
Yeah. No, we don't need any four-man cutoffs, though.
So, I mean, what are your feelings on Dempster? I mean, he's I don't envision him. I don't think any Red Sox fan envisions him as a big loss. He pitched well to at the beginning of last year, really, really faded towards the end, lost his control, wasn't striking guys out, he was walking them, and I mean, he was getting paid like a number 2-3 starter, and frankly, he was performing like a number 6 starter. So I don't see it as a loss. I don't think a lot of Red Sox fans do. What do you think about it?
I mean, to be honest with you, I think his retirement kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, who retires from a team that could easily, you know, repeat a World Series championship and is supposed to get paid $13 million a year? I mean, it's really kind of mind-boggling, but, you know, I don't know if something's going on in his life, but, you know,
health wasn't there at all. Family issues, I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, as a Red Sox fan, to, you know, to see $13 million come off the salary and to give a DeBron and, you know, some of these, Alan Webster and Anthony Renato, give them a shot at battling for that fifth spot, not have to worry about giving a 37, 38-year-old guy that last spot in the rotation. I think, you know, I think it's really a win for the Red Sox, you know, that extra money and being able to develop the youth at the big league level. So, again, yeah, I think you're totally right. I don't think that's a big loss at all.
For sure, for sure. I see it kind of like what you were saying about getting the opportunity to develop some talent. Just briefly talk about, like, if there was an injury to the fifth starter, who is Buchholz slash Dubront at this point, I guess. If Dempster was here, he would be that fifth starter, correct?
I think that, you know,
in the case of an injury.
Right. I think before the season started, they were kind of thinking, you know, maybe we saw him go to the bullpen last year in the playoffs, you know, maybe leave him in there as a long reliever and have him come in for those spot starts. But you're right, now I think it's really, you know, who we got down there in Pawtucket.
Yeah, so now I look at, like, Alan Webster is definitely going to get another shot at some point in the season. A guy that both of us like, because we saw him pitch down in Portland, is Anthony Renato. Not sure if he makes up to the big league level this year, but nonetheless, there's that chance with Dempster gone, a better chance that either of those guys gets into the mix, gets some valuable experience. So all around, the Dempster thing seemed to work out for everyone except for Ryan Dempster, which is very unfortunate. Feel bad for him, but at the same time, we're both Red Sox fans. So moving on to Steven Drew, who, last I checked, he's been the subject of many a Google search by me. He is still not signed by anyone. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, Scott Boras said he might not sign until June, so I don't know what that's all about. But, you know, there's still talks that, you know, there was actually talks that, you know, with Dempster, you know, freeing up $13 million, they could make a run at Steven Drew. But I think the Red Sox are, you know, they're really devoted to their youth. And as we were talking about before, I mean, Xander Bogaerts is, you know, number two prospect in baseball right now. So I don't think the Red Sox are really, I mean, I think Steven Drew wants a multi-year deal coming off a World Series championship. And the Red Sox just aren't willing to do that. You know, they gave him the qualifying offer of $14 million, and he turned it down. So I think Steven Drew is kind of out there for maybe a team down the road that needs a shortstop, but I just don't think it's going to be the Red Sox. And I don't think it's a problem, to be honest with you. You know, I think Xander Bogaerts is fully capable. We saw him come in last year in the playoffs and play some third base and, you know, play a little shortstop. And he's going to be, you know, he's the future, really, for the Red Sox in that infield, you know, with Pedroia and Middlebrooks. I'm not worried about the loss of Steven Drew, to be honest with you.
No, not at all, really. I think a lot of teams are very hesitant to give up that compensatory pick because the Red Sox offered him the qualifying offer. They have to give up a draft pick, so they're hesitant to do that in any situation. The last guy on the list of notable departures would be Jared Saltomachia, and I think he's in the same boat as Dempster, Drew, and Ellsbury. Just another guy that it doesn't hurt too bad to lose. A good player, but you know this, people that are listening don't. I was the biggest Jared Saltomachia hater out there. I don't get why Farrell stuck with him for so long. I was saying that David Ross should be the catcher way before all the Red Sox fans on Twitter were saying that. Why is Salty still starting? So let the Marlins do that. He did sign with the Marlins, correct?
Yeah, he did.
So let the Marlins deal with that. They have a good, he's still semi-young, power-hitting catcher, below average defensively. So again, just another guy that it doesn't hurt too bad to lose, and I'm glad the Red Sox decided that they didn't mind losing him. What do you think?
I mean, similar to what I said about Steven Drew, I really think it came down to the Sox just didn't want to offer him a multi-year deal. I mean, they've got Christian Vasquez, who, you know, we both saw in Portland, is being regarded as one of the, you know, the possibly best defensive catchers. I mean, he's being compared to Yadier Molina with his arm. I saw at one point during spring training, he'd thrown out all 11 runners that were stealing on him. I mean, that's just unheard of.
That's an amazing stat. I didn't hear that one.
So, I mean, you know, the knock on him is, you know, the bat might not quite be there yet. So what do the Red Sox do? They go out and sign AJ Pierzynski. They still have David Ross. You know, there's no rush to get him up to the majors, but we're not going to sit here and have Salty for three more years. That's just, it's not what the Red Sox want right now. So I don't necessarily agree that Salty was as bad as you say he was. I mean, I don't think that he was the pitch caller that the Red Sox need, but he was definitely a solid bat in the lineup. And, you know, while the Red Sox might miss that, I don't think that that loss is really going to hurt them at all. I think, you know, let's talk about AJ Pierzynski. I mean, he's, you know, a veteran guy. He's, you know, been through the ringer. I mean, I think, you know, a one-year deal for a veteran guy like that is exactly what the Red Sox need.
Yeah, I mean, Pierzynski is he's a lot like Saltomaki, actually. He's a little worse of a hitter and a little better a catcher. So, net zero right there. I mean, he's older, too, which is an issue, and especially when David Ross is our second guy. And, I mean, David Ross had the concussion issues last year, so Pierzynski's had injuries in the past. But, like you said, we have catchers in the system, mainly Christian Vasquez, who everyone's really excited about as far as a defensive catcher, who we haven't really had since Jason Varitek.
Right. I mean, and also I just want to throw out there, I mean, we have Ryan LaVarnway, too,
who's played
some catcher, too. So, I don't think...
LaVarnway probably a little more ahead of schedule than Vasquez as far as making it to the big league level.
Definitely. I think if you were to see either David Ross or AJ Pierzynski go on the DL, it would be LaVarnway that came up. To start with, at least. I know he's been involved with some trade talks because the Red Sox kind of have a bottleneck at catcher all of a sudden right now. So we'll see what develops there. I think the Red Sox will kind of hold off on that, knowing that AJ Pierzynski and David Ross are both a little beyond their years and have potential to be injured. So let's talk about, you know, there's been some other kind of smaller signings, but I think, you know, possibly the most intriguing that not many people are really talking about is signing of St. Louis closer or he closed some last year in St. Louis, is Edward Mujica.
Yeah, Trevor Rosenthal took him over late in the year, as we saw in the World Series. Was he anywhere to be found in the World Series? I really don't...
He really had falling out last year, but, you know, when he was pitching well, I mean, his ERA was in the low threes. He was a solid closer for them, and as we know, I mean, you can never have enough guys on the roster that have closing experience. I mean, last year,
we
had Andrew Bailey. We had, I'm drawing a blank now.
Andrew Miller went down.
Andrew Miller.
Yeah, definitely there were a lot of injuries to the Red Sox bullpen last year. That's what allowed us to see Koji Uehara emerge. It's definitely nice to have a guy like Mujica who has had the experience, because it definitely takes a certain persona to be a closer. I mean, it only happened for maybe a couple weeks, but when I saw Tozawa step in as the closer, I really didn't see that killer instinct, really, that we saw from guys like Papelbon and eventually Koji, who maybe didn't have that killer instinct, but he wasn't subject to the moment at all. He just went out there and got the job done. So it's nice to have Mujica as that insurance, as a guy that's closed before, and they got him for next to nothing, which is the real kicker.
Yeah.
If they had gave him a Joel Hanrahan type deal, it would be a different story. But he's making next to nothing. So
yeah, exactly.
Great signing.
I mean, if he's anything like he was last year at the beginning of the season for St. Louis, I mean, you think about having him in the seventh inning, Tozawa in the eighth, and Uehara to close it out. I mean, that's nearly unstoppable right there. I mean,
Breslow still in the mix too.
Breslow and Andrew Miller coming back. I mean, he was low twos last year in the RA before he got injured. So. I mean, that bullpen, you know, and as we know, I mean, bullpen can really be the difference maker, and a lot of people don't think about that, and that's really where the Red Sox have looked these last couple off seasons to kind of shore up, you know, some arms out there. And
so let's talk about the preseason. The Red Sox actually have the worst spring training record in baseball, and I'll be the first one to say that that doesn't mean anything, but I like to look more at individual statistics as far as what guys are slumping, what guys aren't, more than the overall record. But at the same time, it hurts to be the worst, doesn't it?
It certainly does, but I think we all know spring training, you know, really doesn't matter. I mean, the Red Sox have been, you know, resting a lot of guys, some of the older guys, so I'm not concerned, but we'll see what happens in this first series against the Orioles.
Definitely, definitely. And a guy that's been struggling is David Ortiz, batting under 100. I believe it was like 083 last time I checked. Do you make anything of that?
The guy hit over 600 in the World Series. I'm not buying anything right there. He's just not turning it on yet. I mean, it's not a problem for me. Not at all. And, you know, also along those lines, Jackie Bradley Jr. struggling. He's batting under 200, leading the team in strikeouts with 17. Do you think that's all a part of the decision to send him down to AAA to start the season?
Definitely, and yeah, we should report that the Red Sox officially sent Jackie Bradley down to Pawtucket, named Grady Sizemore their opening day center fielder. And I mean, a lot of people thought that, including me, thought that Jackie Bradley Jr. had that job in his lap. Essentially, it was essentially like we lost Ellsbury. And the thinking from most Red Sox fans that I've talked to was, well, we have this great prospect. He's the number 26 prospect in all of baseball, and he's ready right away to take over the job. But as we saw last year, batted over 400 in spring training, and then totally flamed out at the big league level.
I mean, I think, you know, Red Sox fans were anticipating Jackie Bradley Jr. to be the opening day starter, and I think a lot of people thought he really, you know, that wasn't really a question. And then Grady Sizemore comes in, bats over 300 during spring training, and really is able to play back-to-back days. And I think that was really the big question mark was, you know, what's his durability going to be after being out of the league for 2 years and not playing a full season for five? So Jackie Bradley Jr., we know he struggled during spring training, batting under 200, leading the team with 17 strikeouts after, you know, quite possibly the best spring training of anyone last year, hitting above 400. So, you know, I think he'll start the season at AAA, and we'll really get to see, you know, how Grady Sizemore handles this early season workload. And I think that's really going to be the determining factor on if this decision holds up throughout the season.
Yeah, we already went through Grady Sizemore in some depth earlier. I think we're all really excited about the prospects of a guy as talented as he to step in and be the starting center fielder. And some people even have him chalked out to be the leadoff hitter. So he's not my leadoff hitter, but that brings us into who would be your opening day lineup, Ryan?
You know, this is a tough one because, as we've talked about, Jacoby Ellsbury was such a steady leadoff man last year, and it really worked well with him up there in the leadoff spot, you know, getting on base and stealing bases. But, you know, obviously he's not there anymore, so I don't think, and John Farrell's already come out and said that Grady Sizemore won't start as a leadoff hitter, and I think that that's a great decision because, as he said, you know, they don't want him to be getting more at-bats than anybody else to start the season, you know, as a concern with durability. So, you know, I'd like to see leading off Shane Victorino with Pedroia in the two-hole, Ortiz batting third, you know, Napoli cleaning up, and then, you know, here's where it gets tricky. I personally have Grady Sizemore fifth. You know, have some speed there in the middle of the lineup. He's a lefty coming after righty. Then to follow him, Will Middlebrooks, who I'd like to talk about later. I'm a big fan. I think he's got potential for a big year. And then, you know, batting seventh, I'd like to see, you know, the platoon of Daniel Nava, Johnny Gomes. When Nava's in there, that'll be, you know, another lefty-righty thing going on there. Batting eighth, I'd like to see A.J. Pierzynski. And coming around ninth, I'd like to see Xander Bogaerts in there. And, you know, I don't really think you can go wrong there, you know, five through nine. You know, what do you see as a starting lineup?
Yeah, we got the same one through five, I believe. Victorino, or one through four, Victorino, Pedroia, Ortiz, Napoli. I actually have Nava in my fifth slot, the Nava, Johnny Gomes platoon, but I'm more talking about Nava here. I think that he provides Napoli, and to an extent Ortiz, with more protection than Grady Sizemore would. Maybe if Grady Sizemore does pan out, then he's that guy over Nava. But as it stands right now, Nava hit close to 300 last year, sixth in the league in OBP. He's a guy that can get on base. He's a guy that has some pop at the beginning of last year, kind of lost that pop down the road, but definitely a guy that you can't walk Napoli and say, okay, we'll pitch to Nava, which right now I think Sizemore is liable to be that guy that pitchers don't mind pitching to right now until he proves himself. But if he does prove himself, I'd have to slot him up in the lineup. That being said, I do have Sizemore after Nava, get some speed at the bottom of the lineup. Middlebrooks after Sizemore, Bogaerts above Pierzynski. And I just say that because I think Bogaerts has the potential to be a better hitter than A.J. Pierzynski. Right now, probably not. Doesn't provide as much power. But definitely want him to get some at-bats. And I think that'll allow him to do that. So those are our opening day lineups. What do you think about the rotation? I saw Clay Buchholz is actually the fifth starter who talked about a little bit earlier. Both of us were kind of perplexed by him being the fifth starter, a guy that was arguably the best pitcher in baseball for the first half of last year. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, that could be someone we don't know. I don't know if his, you know, shoulder is still a problem or not, but, you know, if he's on his game, he's arguably the best pitcher on the Red Sox. So, you know, to slot him there in the fifth spot, I'm not crazy about the decision, but I don't think down the road it's really going to be, you know, much of an issue. And think about it, I mean, once the season gets going and we're just in the flow of things, you know, you could start a series with Buchholz and then go Lester and Lackey. So, you know, I think once the season gets going, him being the fifth starter won't really be – we won't really think about it that way. So, for me, that's not much of a big deal. I'd like to talk a little bit about Felix DeBrandt. He started off the preseason very well, but, you know, the last – two outings in spring training, he's actually been shelled. So, you know, are you at all worried about Felix DeBrandt with those spring training numbers in the last two starts?
It's not the spring training numbers that worry me. It's his utter lack of control that he's displayed at times, while at the same time he has some of, if not the best stuff on the Red Sox entire rotation. I mean, he can drop that curve in there and get a lot of guys swinging as well, and he's got his fastball isn't necessarily up there 95 plus, closer to 90, but it gets a lot of guys out. It's got some tail on it, so he has the stuff. He really, really, really needs to work on his control. But what does it? I wasn't a Felix DeBrandt fan at all for most of the year last year. But what gave me a glimmer of hope was his performance in the postseason. He actually played a huge role in their World Series win, which I didn't think he would at all. Came in there and threw a couple shutout innings a few times. So that gives me some hope. I'm not necessarily that worried about the spring training numbers.
Yeah, I would say I'm not really either. And you talked about his control, and I think one of the biggest knocks on him is his pitch count. He usually can't go deep into games, but as we've talked about, the bullpen really can pick you up. If you go six innings, that's not a problem with this Red Sox bullpen. So I think, you know, early in the year, if his pitch count's getting, you know, up there, and obviously they're going to have a limit on him to start the season. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting, but I think, you know, I think he's going to be, you know, a bit of a surprising guy for the Red Sox this year. I think if he can, you know, command the ball, I think he's going to be a very solid starter for the Red Sox, and he's got some filthy stuff. That curveball, like you said, is just, it can get some guys out in a hurry.
Yeah, for sure. And let's talk about the rest of the AL East. Of course, you said we have the Orioles for opening day. In Camden Yards, we got Chris Tillman starting game one, Ubaldo Jimenez game two, and then Chen game three. I was pretty surprised to see Chris Tillman up there as their number one starter. I actually wrote a piece for Standing O Sports about the Orioles season preview, and none of these pitchers are going to get anyone too scared. No one's going to be shaking facing this Orioles rotation, and you can see that their opening day starter is Chris Tillman. So, I mean, I don't want to say it's embarrassing because it's not, but I think the Red Sox should definitely be looking to take at least two out of three in that opening series and should be looking to tee off on the Orioles starters all year.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about this Red Sox lineup is very dangerous, and the Orioles have got to be a little scared tossing those starters out, you know, against a Lester Lackey PV rotation. So I think, you know, the Red Sox should easily take two out of three, if not, you know, have the potential for a sweep if the Orioles can't shut down the Red Sox in at least one game. So, you know, I think this is a good opening series for the Red Sox, good chance to, you know, start the season above 500 and get the ball rolling.
You think Nelson Cruz does anything for that lineup this year?
You know, the whole PED suspension, I don't really know what it does to a guy. I mean, I think it's an intriguing signing, to say the least. You know, add him in there with a Chris Davis, provide a little protection. you know, I'm not excited to see, you know, Lester and these guys have to pitch against that lineup. The one nice thing is, you know, the Red Sox likely won't see Manny Machado in this series, and, you know, he's a very up-and-coming third baseman, so the Red Sox will get a benefit of not having to see him in that lineup.
Exactly, and we already talked about, as far as the rest of the AL East, the Yankees already broke down the Ellsbury deal, but we got to talk about the Tanaka deal. Do you think that pans out at all? Is he going to be Dice K, or is he going to be Darvish? I mean, I think that's the question that a lot of people are asking right now. A lot of the scouts seem to think he trends more towards the Darvish, not on that level, but at least closer to Darvish than to Dice K.
Yeah, I mean, these Japanese pitchers are always intriguing. I mean, as a Red Sox fan, you know, I was thrilled with the Dice K signing, and he went, I think, 17-3 in his first season. So, you know, these guys have potential, and I think this season could be potentially his best, to be honest with you, because I think when he's the biggest strength of these Japanese pitchers is no one's seen them. No one's hit against them. And they usually have some deceptive pitches. So I think early on he could be very dangerous for this Yankees team, but you know, that's a lot of money to throw at a guy that's never thrown a pitch in the majors. So
yeah, I don't know. I just when Darvish came over with the Rangers, I said that they're making a mistake because I'm a Red Sox fan and I saw what happened with Dice K. I said, this is a huge mistake. You can't throw all that money at a guy that's never pitched in the big leagues. And now he's the leading candidate for Cy Young this year. So with such a wide spectrum we've seen, it's really hard for me to even make a prediction. But we do know the Blue Jays. They went out, they kind of did what the Marlins did a few years ago. In fact, they signed a few Marlins, Jose Reyes, and they brought in R.A. Dickey, of course, who won the NL Cy Young and then faded into oblivion with the Blue Jays. So I don't see the Blue Jays posing any sort of threat this year. They haven't really added anyone that I know of that is going to make me want to think that they're going to be any more of a threat than they were last year when they severely underperformed. The only thing that can help the Blue Jays is health.
And this Blue Jays team is, it's an intriguing one. And as we've seen, we've seen with the Red Sox a couple years ago, is these teams on paper seem great, but as we've seen with the Red Sox, it's chemistry that really, really, you know, is undervalued, I think, by a lot of major league GMs. So, you know, I don't see, as you said, I don't see the Blue Jays really, you know, factoring into a very tough AL East.
Yeah, Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista, always nice to have them in the lineup, but that rotation and the rest of the lineup, other than maybe Brett Laurie and those two guys, not going to really scare anyone. I see probably a below 500 finish for the Blue Jays. And the only team that we haven't talked about is the Rays, who, you know, man, they just keep on ticking. They signed the biggest guy they brought in this year was Balfour, Grant Balfour from the A's. Had a great year last year, 38 saves. Brought him in for 2 years, $12 million. So while it's not a big deal, it's more than the Rays usually spend. So you can see that they're trying to get a little bit better. But at the same time, they didn't really make any splashes. So I actually have the Rays finishing second in front of the Yankees, with the Red Sox winning, of course. I thought you said you had the Yankees in front of the Rays, didn't you?
Yeah, it breaks my heart, but I'm looking at this AL East, and to be honest with you, it's going to be really another crazy year in the AL East. I mean, when is it not? But, you know, I have the Yankees in there because of their lineup, and, you know, I think Kuroda, you know, they signed him again, and he was actually very, very strong last year. So I think with Tanaka and Kuroda and Sabathia at the top of that rotation, that'll get them some wins. You know, the bottom half isn't very strong, but they went out and got some guys this year. You know, Carlos Beltran, we talked about, obviously, Ellsbury, Brian McCann. That's going to be a very dangerous lineup if they can stay healthy. But I think really what the Yankees' downfall is going to be is that bullpen. I mean, David Robertson, you know, will probably do a good job closing it out, but other than that, I don't know how they're going to get anybody out there. So,
yeah, definitely no established names after David Robertson. I just look at the Rays, and their rotation is extremely, extremely underrated. You have David Price, of course, who had a bit of a down year last year, but at times showed that he could still be a Cy Young candidate. Alex Cobb, who and Matt Moore. Chris Archer, who has some of the best stuff I've ever seen. So, I mean, you have those four guys up there. The fifth guy is kind of up in the air right now as far as Jeremy Hellickson. His health isn't there all the way right now. But definitely that rotation is probably going to give the Red Sox fits at times this year, as we've seen in the past with the Rays. So, yeah, I definitely look for the Rays to finish second. You have the Yankees, and frankly, I can see it either way. It's definitely going to be like you said, always difficult division, very difficult division in the past few years. Definitely going to be the same this year. So we'll see how it pans out. It's going to be a very interesting battle for this division.
So, you know, kind of to finish things out here, there's some interesting, you know, Red Sox over-unders from Bovada. So let's run through a couple of these. The first one they have is Dustin Pedroia, batting average, over-under, 299. What do you got there?
You know, I'm going to go over on that. I don't know exact. Did he hit over 300? I should know this. Let me check it real quick. Dustin Pedroia hit 301 this past season.
He's always right around that 300 number.
Yeah, he's always around there. So it's a good line, but with the thumb injury being in the past, supposedly, I'm going to go over 300 on that. And what about you? What do you think about that?
It's definitely going to be an over for Pedroia this year. Probably right around that 310 number if I have to guess. Another Dustin Pedroia one, RBIs, 79.5. And, you know, to be honest with you, for me, I think this is a dangerous one because we don't know where he's going to be hitting in this lineup. Is he going to be two? Is he going to be three? If he's three, I definitely have to say over. But if he's two, I don't know.
If I was a betting man, which I am, I would definitely. I'm gonna say I have to go under. I probably wouldn't touch it, but I just couldn't, in good faith, go over on the 79.5 number, knowing that he only had 84 last year and he played literally the entire season, just about. Another interesting one is David Ortiz. His over-under for home runs is 27.5. He hit 30 last year, despite starting the season on the DL. What you got for that one?
You know, he hasn't played over 146 games since 2009. He's always right around that 30 number. I'm going to have to say over, but it's going to be close. I wouldn't touch it. He's always battling. You know, he's going to be on the DL once or twice this year, with, you know, just a little bit of a health concern, so I wouldn't touch it.
Right, and I think the 95.5 RBIs, you can make all the same arguments for that. That's his RBI over-under is 95.5. He had 103 last year, so again, along the same lines as the home runs number, injury concerns, and then you've got Napoli, his home runs is 25.5, so Mike Napoli hit 23 home runs last year, playing through that hip injury. Did manage to play 139 games, though, so full slate of games, essentially, for a guy who's, you know, he's going to need some off days. So he had 23 last year. Do you think he ups that total this year?
I don't see it, to be honest with you. I mean, I'd like to see it, but he, you know, I thought he was really going to abuse the monster, and he really just hit a lot of doubles last year, and it seems like when the Red Sox bring in these power hitters, they do see a dip in home runs. I don't know what it is, but I don't see him getting above 25.5 this season. I think he'll be upwards of 20, but I don't think he'll break 25.
Right, exactly. A lot of doubles is not a bad thing, but at the same time, have to go under on that number. Then you have Shane Victorino, 275 average. He hit about 294 last year, so well over that number, in fact. Granted, he did have one of his better years, a kind of rejuvenating his career in Boston. So he had 294 last year, almost 20 points higher than what they have the over-under at 275. So I'm going to have to go over. I see him about at, like, 280. I see a little bit of a decline, but I'm going to go over the 275. I say Victorino hits about 280, between the 280 and 285 range. So, I mean, what do you have for that?
I think that's an easy over, to be honest with you. I mean, the biggest concern with Victorino is his health, and that really doesn't factor into his average. I mean, if he's out a game, he's not getting hits, but he's not getting plate appearances. So I think, you know, he really did rejuvenate his career last year with a 294 average, and I think I see him, you know, maybe not quite that high this year, but certainly over 275. That being said, I think we've got an interesting prop up next. We've got Will Middlebrooks over under 25.5 home runs. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, last year between Pawtucket and the Red Sox hit 27 home runs. I know he struggled with his average, but this is a guy with a lot of pop on his bat. What do you see here on this prop?
You know, I'm going to go under on this one. Pretty much just a gut feeling. I like what he's been doing this spring training. Has his average up around or over 300, in fact. But just gut feeling, I'm going to go under 25.5. I don't know if he gets all the playing time that he's going to need to get those numbers. If he doesn't get his average up above the Mendoza line, then Farrell's going to have a tough time trotting him out there. So I'm going to go under 25.5 on that.
See, and I'm a big Will Middlebrooks fan, but I'm going to have to go over for, you know, just the opposite reason that you said. I mean, he lost his playing time last year at Bogaerts, who is undoubtedly going to be our starting shortstop. So I don't really see another guy coming in and stealing his playing time at all. And he's proven, I mean, last year with that 27 home runs between, you know, the majors and AAA, he's proven that he has a pop in his bat. And we saw the average up around 290 in 2012. So I think that this is a guy who's going to have, you know, possibly a breakout campaign with both his average and his home runs, you know, up this year. So kind of moving on to the pitching, we've got an interesting one again here with Clay Buchholz over under at 13.5. Now, this is a guy who, if he's healthy, is probably the best Red Sox pitcher, you know, starter, and yet they only have him at 13.5 wins. You know, why do you think that is?
They probably only have him about at 13.5 wins because not many people have faith that Buchholz is going to be able to pitch an entire season, and that's a very warranted sentiment to have against Buchholz because we've seen him have a variety of different ailments, his daughter sleeping on his shoulder, whatever that was. But that being said, I think he does get over 13.5 wins. I see about 15, 16. What I'd love to see would be 20, which is what he's capable of if he pitches an entire season like he did at the start of last season, back when he was using that sunscreen combo, as the Blue Jays said.
Yeah, I mean, that 13.5 is totally injury-related. And, I mean, like you said, if this guy's healthy, I don't see there's any way that he's underneath that mark. This guy's got, I would say, the best stuff of any starter. And if he's anything like he was last year at the beginning of the season, I mean, he was the best pitcher in the majors, you know, through his first 10 or 12 starts last season. So I think definitely over on that one. And, you know, this guy might be listed as our 5-starter right now, but I think every Red Sox fan out there knows that this guy is really our 1 or 2 man. It's just a little bit of an injury concern to start the season, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. And so the last one we've got here is obviously the big one. Red Sox total wins for the season. Bovada Sportsbook has them at 87.5. And, I mean, am I wrong to say this is a little disrespectful? 87.5 wins for the defending World Series champions who returned everyone and more from that team?
I mean, I think really the main concern here is probably that everything went right for the Red Sox last year. You know, not many injuries. Obviously, Buchholz was a little in and out. But really, I mean, you couldn't have asked for much more in the health department last year. So I think the concern is maybe, you know, maybe something doesn't fall the Red Sox way, but that would be dropping 10 wins. And as you said, they really didn't lose anyone that, you know, somebody coming in can't fill in. So I think that is very low. And I mean, while I don't see the Red Sox at 97 wins again this year, because again, you know, I don't know if everything is going to go quite as right, but I would certainly have to say that this is a team who's very capable of producing, you know, 92, 93, maybe 94 wins to clinch the AL East.
Yeah, if I had to put a number on it, it'd be somewhere in that 92 to 94 wins, but I think you're definitely safe with going over 87.5 wins. I mean, if you have the capital to invest for on a 162-game baseball season, then I'd definitely say throw that on the over 87.5 wins for the Red Sox. Like we said, probably see him definitely in the 90 range. So, I mean, it's going to be another good year for the Red Sox. I can't envision any sort of collapse with this clubhouse environment, roster. Definitely AL East is going to be tough, like we've said many times before in this show. So they're going to be right in the thick of things. We both have them winning the division, but it could go anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the one concern always is the depth. I mean, you look at a Yankees team, if somebody goes down that lineup, who's going to fill in? But that's not a concern with this Red Sox team. I mean, as we've seen in spring training, there's many, you know, I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. is not even on the opening day roster. I mean, this is a team with plenty of depth in the farm system to fill in when an injury occurs. So I totally agree that, you know, probably this 87.5 is the easiest over out of anything that we've been over. So, yeah, so with that being said, that's going to do it today for the Lone Red Seat. I'm Ryan Bellageron.
And I'm Ian Barber.
We hope you join us next time.
This show's again been brought to you by Standing O Sports, sports writing that deserves a standing ovation. Visit them at standingosports.com for all the latest MLB, NBA, NFL news and more, including a season preview for all 30 big league clubs. Thanks, guys.